The church with no pews. Brief introduction. The children's home, and located in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, is about a mile and a half as the crow flies from downtown, just nearly in downtown Winston-Salem. The campus, as during the time period in which I have known it, is about 212 acres, bordered by, on the upper northern end of the campus, another Methodist facility called Arbor Acres, which was originally Children's Home land, which Arbor Acres turned into a nursing facility run by the United Methodist Church, or affiliated with the United Methodist Church. The children's home began in 1909 when needs started to arise for assistance with many, many orphans, and which particularly as World War I, the Depression, and then on into World War II became incredibly important. There were hundreds, thousands of orphans that came there. At least 7,500 surely came through those doors over the first 100 years. And those are ones that would have stayed there for some period of time. There were also many, many others by the hundreds and thousands who came over the years and had some or were affected by the children's home in some way through its services and their families. So the untold thousands, tens of thousands of Western North Carolina families and children were affected. Alongside that, there were also at least 1,200 United Methodist churches, which through the years had assisted the children's home in various ways. Of course, that number 1,200 came later on. To start with, in the early 1900s, there were not nearly that many, but the number of churches rose and grew through the years. The church members from every corner of Western North Carolina, from the smallest towns, of all ages, from the least children all the way up to the retired widows and their families, church Sunday school classes, entire churches took on projects to raise money to come and do things for the children's home in many, many ways. And early on, when the children's home was first created, around 1920 or so, I believe, Reverend Jesse Pinckney Rogers being the first development officer, more or less, decided on a plan to take groups of children from the children's home who practiced various songs and put them on a tour bus and take them out to, put them on a bus and take them out across the conference to churches and perform in various locales, and that helped raise money in order to build the tremendous brick buildings which remain at the children's home after 100 years. Originally, at their height, there were probably at least 30 of such buildings, 35 such buildings, plus a working farm with a huge barn that had been used to store hay and milk barns. Being on the National Register of Historic Places, that particular barn, incredible barn. There were various things. The school, at various times, it became part of the public school system and competed just like with every other public school in sports, and sports became a big thing for the alumni, for the children that were there. And the alumni still speak of that because they actually won a lot of games. The people coming from the children's home have been so incredible. Some, of course, there were many who fell through the cracks, who whose lives did not come together. But there also have been incredibly talented and amazing people who have come through the doors of the children's home. For example, Dr. Roy Witherspoon was the head of the religion department at UNC Charlotte, has a dormitory named after him. Had a cheesecake recipe put in Southern Living magazine. Dr. William R. Shelton, who became the head of the new development office in the early 1980s. He wrote films for NASA. Wrote several books, novels, but he also wrote one that was made into a movie called Stowaway to the Moon, starring Lloyd Bridges. All this has been made possible by United Methodists across Western North Carolina and done in the name of the good God in the heavens and Jesus. And in the 1950s, a tremendous, beautiful church named Woosley Chapel in honor of Superintendent Pop Woosley, who oversaw the operations of the home at its height in terms of number of children, where it got up to 500-plus children living on the campus at one time in the 1950s. When this chapel was built, beautiful church stands at the crest of the hill on the campus. Woosley Chapel saw thousands of children come through its doors for services every Sunday. In the fellowship hall, they gathered for Christmas parties where United Methodist groups sent them amazing gifts, individual gifts that were sent to the children. A list was sent to the churches who requested that. And the United Methodist women and all kinds of groups determined what each child wanted, or in some cases they gave them cash if they didn't pick out an individual gift. They held parties, Christmas parties for them, in these fellowship halls. In the Sunday school classrooms, the children gathered to learn about Jesus and the Bible studies and Bible stories, and learn scriptures and psalms and sing and participate in church activities. Later on, that became Kingswood School for a while, a private charter school there for the kids. But the Big Woosley Chapel was the focus of so many things, even weddings of alumni, of children, of staff members, various people. But so many thousands experienced Woosley Chapel and the greatness and the graciousness of God. The Christmas programs there with the Christmon tree, amazing warmth and love emanated there. The children's choirs sang. What an amazing experience. And even a love feast from the Moravian church members was brought there with music and feast buns and hot chocolate, and the children gathered at the big campus Christmas tree near the administration building for its lighting every year, and ringed it when the and sang carols and welcomed in a new Christmas season. So such spirit has gone through those doors into the chapel and into the cottages, into all parts of the Children's Home campus. And so many alumni came there and participated and helped to work on the farm as boys, helping milk cows and bring in hay and everything that goes along with farm work, and girls helping with laundry, and in the early days helping make clothes as needed, etc. So what a family. What an incredible family. Having worked at the children's home for 23 years in the development office called the Brown Building at that time, where I was hired by William R. Shelton who grew up at the home and who had so many remarkable skills and talents in writing and getting out the story to the United Methodists and to the donors and to the local area about the good and great work of the Children's Home. He taught me so much and there, and while he retired early on in my 23 years, and John Ammons came in, another alumnus of the home, who became a director of planned giving and director of development, and I did the Home Chronicle quarterly newsletter. I learned so many things about the home through these years, and about the children there and the families that were being served, and about the United Methodist groups and support. Having experienced all this wonderful and amazing place called the Children's Home, an affiliation with the United Methodist Church, whose support made it possible in helping meet the needs of children and families, I now came back many, many years later. Another 20 plus years, over 23 years had passed since I left the place. And many emotions spilled over me as I came back into these walls, into this campus, when I visited the buildings and the farm. My first impression was when we pulled up, I was with the Daughters of American Revolution, who support the new version of the Children's Home now called Crossnore, which has a wonderful program, well known in the mountains of North Carolina. And the Children's Home made a big decision to let Crossnore take over. But I had not been back, and but only one time had I ever been back onto the campus in 20 plus years. I walked toward the church, towards the Edwards Building, towards the central campus, with the ladies who were with me from the Daughters of the American Revolution, and was taken aback just by being there. Just being back after so many years to this incredible place was amazing. And thoughts began to pour into my head and affect my heart from all those years that I had been there as we walked into the central campus. Going first into the Edwards Building, which had been the social services building, but prior to that was actually a public school, and we had a meeting in the auditorium. Again, thoughts and memories flowed into my heart of the years that we had had alumni homecomings of the Children's Home alumni there on Easter Monday, and it always began with the ringing of the old school bell, which was on the stage. And my first impression was, there's no school bell there now. And I was kind of shocked, because they always started the program with that school bell ringing. And then they sang the Children's Home song, which everyone participated in. But as I stayed there longer, I began to feel a little more used to the proceedings. And then after the meetings adjourned for that DAR group introductions, we were allowed to go out and take tours of the campus. So I rode around with a fine young lady from Tennessee. She actually lives in Tennessee, which is quite a ways from the Children's Home, but she works at the Crossnore campus there and in Western North Carolina, and so she had been recruited to do tours. So she came down and drove the golf cart and took us around, and I stayed on that golf cart for at least 45 minutes with her taking me around to see the campus, and I was just amazed. But when that was done, she let me out, and I walked up to eat with the women for lunch, and they invited us into the chapel. We walked in the doors of the chapel, and I had heard this, but I had not seen it. This tremendous, incredible church Woosley Chapel, larger than average United Methodist churches across Western North Carolina, a very, very beautiful structure with an incredible steeple, traditionally built with white tall columns, in which I had memories of so many services and Christmas activities. The doors were wide open, and as we walked in, I saw there were no pews. Not a single pew anywhere in the church. They were all gone. I was in shock and disbelief. Where were the pews? I knew better than to ask, because I knew that forces would conspire to either tell me untruths or to quiet me in some manner or fashion if I had any reservations about this. So I just went along. Inside the chapel, they had placed numerous tables, round tables, for the DAR ladies to eat their meal. And they were covered with plastic tablecloths, and we sat at our tables and talked and ate our meal. And I looked up and I saw a huge, huge movie projection screen at the front of the church, and it was pulled down. And we did not see a movie there, so, or any type of documentary. So I presumed that it stayed that way and that it was not normally taken back up into its carrier, the screen itself, if it had the ability to go back up into the carrier. It's the biggest projection screen I have ever seen. Well, probably the biggest I have ever seen. It was at least larger than the ones in my church, which is the second largest church on the East Coast in terms of seating in Charlotte. And that gives you an idea of the size of that screen that had been put in the front of the church. So what was that? What was my thought at that point? The view of the cross in the front of the church, the choir loft, the pretty much all of the entire front of the church was blocked off by this screen. Most churches now today, if they have screens in their church, they do not block off the view of any of that. They are arranged on each side in such a manner, on one side or on both sides, or in some manner, so that they don't block off any of the representation of the holiness of the church. Obviously, no thought was given to the cross or any part of the church. I thought back, and I remembered that 20-some years back when I left the children's home, and disappointment and sadness flooded me into my being from the thoughts that when I left there, I was forced to leave, and before they let me go, they offered me an opportunity to come for a re-interview. And that re-interview amounted to an hour almost of my current boss at that time and our program director, whose husband happened to be Arabic from Bulgaria, interviewing me again about my job and my role at the children's home and what I would be doing. And the key question that was asked me by that program director lady was, with the introduction that things were going to change at the children's home, the key question was, will you be willing to keep working here at the children's home if you cannot share information with the children about religion or about Jesus Christ? Will you be willing to continue working here? at the children's home under those conditions? And my answer was no. That was my answer. So I understood now the fuller impact of that question in terms of the history of the children's home over the past 20 years and the complete change. It had become a place where religion did not was not important in terms of its program, services, or functions. There was a complete and entire change, and I also thought about the alumni when I left there and went into the Brown Building where I used to work, a smaller building, and I saw that they had completely changed everything in that building upstairs, and though they had much more space, they had just turned it into a little store for selling woven goods. That is their main skill that they do so very, very well at Cross North School in the mountains that they had perfected. So in the basement of that building, in a little 30 by 50 foot maybe area, they had crammed the entire history of the children's home into one small museum. An excellent museum, for sure, an excellent museum. But it's as if the whole entire children's home had been crammed into one small 30 by 50 nook. On my rides on the campus, around the campus, I had noticed that they had demolished R.G. Stockton Cottage for Boys, which was actually the newest one. It was gone on the upper campus. And they demolished Norfleet Cottage for Boys. It was gone. It wasn't too old a cottage, but it was in good condition. Both of these were in very good condition. They demolished a girls' Stockton cottage, a three-story structure that stood behind the main campus building. Reynolds Baby Cottage was the earliest nice cottage structure built on the front end of the campus where everyone in the community can see it going down the road. They retained that one, but the one behind it, Girls R.G. Stockton Cottage, was gone. James A. Gray, also in front of that, was gone. It seems to me like the goal of Cross North was to demolish the children's home, its entire history and its entire being. The superintendent's house being the oldest building remaining on the campus had been changed from a superintendent's house to a guest house. And the horse stalls on the upper campus where my husband had worked, and he actually had those stalls put in as part of the old cannery there. And that entire section had completely been overgrown with weeds. And oh, what a day. No horses, no cows. I saw no cows. There may have been some, but I did not see any. I saw maybe one goat and one turkey and one large dog and a llama or an alpaca. And how sad the days that pass in that history. How sad the church with no pews. How sad. How sad. It may be inevitable that the children's home as an orphanage would have to change and maybe even go away. It's possible. But there's nothing but great sadness in the fact that all of these lives of these children that came through there, especially ones that had no family or had little contact with family or had a bad family situation. It's sad to think that that history and that life and that those glorious days all fade away with so little memory, so very little memory. And whatever memory there is crammed into a 30 by 50 foot room. That's a basement. That is not good enough to be upstairs where the weaving is sold. It has to be downstairs. I remembered when Bill Shelton, when he ran the development office, and I was learning under that fine man, I remember typing up something that he wrote one time in his prophecies, which there were prophecies that happened. And in his prophecy about 1982, he was describing a church where big, huge screens. There were big, huge screens, maybe like movie screens in the church. He described that. And I have thought in recent years of the church that I attend with its big screens. It has two huge screens there too. And I knew that Bill Shelton was prophetic when he saw this picture in his mind. I knew he was. But what I didn't know was that one huge screen would be in the Children's Home Church, where there are no pews anymore.